You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. After 8 on a Thursday edition of All Marine Radio right here on the All Warrior Radio Network. Joining me from, I believe he's in Los Angeles right now, but we've been talking about healthcare and different versions of how the VA distributes services and better models. So Mike McDowell joins us now, and Mike was introduced to me by a mutual friend of ours by the name of Mike Frazier, and who used to be a lot funnier than he is now. yeah, not as funny anymore. He's like selling electricity. He's like sad. He's like sad sack now.
Oh Lord, no, he's peddling. Hey, just remember, we're working hard with the 11th Marine Memorial, so that's what, I think he's been sending out various emails through the last few months just updating us on our stuff, so he's a working man now, you know.
Yeah, he is a working man. Now, are you an artilleryman by trade?
I am, actually, 0802, and then also civil affairs as a secondary MOS.
All right, so you're I didn't know if we met through him or you were somehow or other related to him by MOS, but so give everybody a quick recap of your career, McDowell.
Well, I went into OCS in January of 2001, and of course was at OCS when 9/11 happened.
Wow. How did they tell you guys? Did they get you guys in the big auditorium and say you're all going to die? That's what the Marine Corps tends to do when this kind of stuff happens.
Well, they do, and you get the big thrill of the Korean War Peninsula scenario. But let me backtrack. It was at the basic school that we were there, watching it happen in between classes. We were on the TV. You know, we had a break, and so we were over in our room. So it wasn't OCS, but the basic school right directly thereafter.
Right.
And that was the moment that everything came to fruition with regard to purpose.
All right. So you're at the basic school then, and then give us the rest of your career in 60 seconds.
Wow.
I know it's a gigantic career, and it's virtually impossible for me to do that given my lofty accomplishments, but
from my experience
exactly.
As a second lieutenant. No, I was really blessed. I went with some great folks over to Lawton and cut my teeth in artillery school, and after that we got went over to Pendleton, grew up in 211. With Mike Marletto and company, and basically OIF-1, and then that was the initial push. I was with 2-5. I was with some great infantry battalions during that time. 2-5, then came back 2-4, and just some other great ones. And at that point, went into the cycle as everybody else does with constant deployments. I've done. I was a bit with NRR Iraq, down on the borders there, and then I was my second deployment. Then I went on 2 1-year deployments, separate years, 2005 and 2006, and then that was with General Miller, Lee Miller, who's mm-hmm. now, or he was a. Was a 2-star when I was at CENTCOM here just recently.
He was a first.
He
was a first lieutenant SPC in my basic school class.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
He's a patriot, and I tell you what, he's one of those scholars again that always learning. And I ran into him actually. I hadn't seen him since the Mew. Kate Germano and I served together during that time, and she was the adjunct, obviously, for the 31st Mew, and of course I was the targeting guy. And I ended up running into him in 2014 when I was did a 6 month I had a TSSCI clearance out of EWTG PAC, and then they kind of poached me over there for 6 months. Be their
okay, hold on, hold on. Just for everybody who doesn't know, tell everybody that's a really high clearance, yes?
Yeah, that's the top secret, special compartmentalized information. So I was the only guy that had it, which a curse to have it.
Yeah, when they say that, like music plays in the background.
Yeah, that's Mission Impossible,
exactly.
And I go on ropes, unfortunately.
Exactly. And then with, what'd you say, LFTC PAC, Landing Force Training
Command? Yeah, EWTG PAC over in Coronado. Okay. That's where I retired out of a year ago, actually. It'll be officially a year.
Wow.
Well, my first year out will be August 1st. By date, I took terminal, obviously, at the end of April of 2016. But the funny thing about, I got to tell you something about Lee Miller, General Miller. So I haven't seen him since 2006. He changed, he turned over the Mew, and then, of course, we go out and do our things. And so I'd heard that he was over at MARSOC, or not MARSOC, but at CENTCOM, and he was the chief of staff. Over there with the Special Operations Command. And I happened to be right, I lived in a trailer down on the south end of the base there in Tampa, and I'm driving, one afternoon, because I'd worked 5 in the morning to 5 at night, and I just happened to roll out during that time, and I see this guy walk in with his wife, obviously, and he had green skivvies on, green silky skivvies and a and a tropical shirt, and he's got this big hat on. I'm like, man, who is this guy? He's marine over here,
Who's this drunk?
And I kid you not. And so I stopped my car mid drive because there's very little traffic, out there on the peripheral.
Yeah, maybe
the water.
Maybe he needs a ride to the homeless shelter or something.
Right? He's got this big brimmed hat on that's a sun hat. You'd wear golfing. And I said, and I'm in uniform, right? So I just came off work. So I come back and I, of course, get out of the car and I said, that's General Miller. Well, I knew him as Colonel Miller at the time. And so he was always wonderful to me and we had a lot of time to share. He was a great mentor so I saluted him and of course he remembered me right away and his wonderful wife, who he was walking with, and I said, "Sir, you got to work on your, you can't go in public with these things," And he just laughed. But
he didn't look at his wife.
But anyway,
you didn't, because the wife is the one who dressed him. Like, really? Is this what you allow? You allow this?
It was so General Miller though, because they just don't care, and it's. He's just an infantry guy through and through. I love it.
He's a Texas A&M guy too, if I'm not mistaken, if I recall right.
So. I can't remember what he is as far as for school.
And they are socially challenged down there. They think those big tall boots are cool, which immediately makes that little part of the population a bunch of dorks. So we work with them.
That's like you get. My wife will not let me have those shorts. I mean, literally, I don't have any more. They're great for undershorts because, they get wet, they dry out real quick, and they're great in the field, but I don't know if I'd want to be, in public with that. I might get arrested or something. I'm not
exactly.
Sure. But anyway,
so that
was the second deployment. I went back again, 31st MU for Colonel John Myrna, who we had talked about before. Again, a great patriot and 5th Marine guy I keep in touch with him periodically from time to time. And then I went to Afghanistan in 2011 with J.D. Harrell and company with 2-8. And then with Colonel Schmidt, Dan Schmidt with 3-6. He came in right after that. So I've just
Did I forget that we were there at the same time?
Yeah, we were there because you were with it was with Colonel Furness at the time, General Furness.
Yeah. Interesting.
Shoveling. You had one of the greatest patriots of all time down there for your artillery liaison officer.
Who?
Do you remember who it was?
No. Who was it?
I'm drawing a blank here. I'll think of it in a second. He's one of the biggest complainers ever in mankind history.
Well,
he was with 111 at the time that he came over there. He was your L&O. I'll think of his name in a second.
He's an arty guy. They tend to be whiners.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that's true. We have to put up with you guys.
Before we talk about the Soldier Project, talk to me. I'm just curious. A lot of people are curious, and I've got a number of emails today about the whole transgender thing. I think I would speak for a lot of my friends in saying this. Hey, look, no Marine that I know of is hating on anybody transgender. You know, we live in a pretty wide open world these days, and you know, whatever people want to do, they want to do. Nobody's questioning anybody's patriotism. The issue, at least for me, and I think I speak for the majority of my friends, is simply an operational issue. Having women that get pregnant is problem enough because it takes them out of the operational rotation, and you're playing short in terms of players, right? To think you would do this for years with somebody, I think is not fair I can just speak from my narrow experience in the Marine Corps. It's not fair to operating units. And I'd be curious about your thoughts. Obviously a big subject around the country.
Yeah, I don't even know where to begin on that one. You know, it's one of the things that I think we politicize our leadership, our civilian leadership, politicize these issues for a very, very, very small minority of people. I can't imagine there being that many. I think you and I talked offline that, you know, I'd like to see what the numbers look like of how many they're actually including. But again, it comes down to the nature of our business. I mean, it's about readiness. You know, General Mattis spoke about that. Just, you know, lethality. You know, that's our responsibility as a warfighting, you know, group. And I think that's where we get sidetracked with, you know, these politics that are involved in it. And it certainly takes us off the mark of what we really need to do. And that's just to be ready for the next conflict. And,
right. And again, if you can't deploy for any reason, for that length of time, then you're not, you know, that's why we med board people out. That's why we do it. But I would say this, though. But if you're post-op and you meet all the requirements, I don't think a transgender person ought to be barred if they meet the psychological requirements and they meet the physical post-op. I don't have any issue with that. But I think...
that's not getting picked up in the narrative, though.
Exactly. But I think asking the military to shelve people for that long a period of time isn't fair. And so I would say that they should you can't do it while you're on active duty. If you're post op, you're more than welcome to come down and test. If you qualify, then come on in. The water's warm. So, anyway.
Well, and I think there's another consideration too, you know, and I know we talked about this with our, you know, the females in combat and in combat arms, you know, situation. I think there's a part of it in a mentorship thing that I don't get, that I think doesn't get addressed, and that's, you know, by putting people like, you know, people in general into those kind of billets, whether a female that's in a land, you know, as far as a line company or whatever, you know, it has nothing to do with the mental side of it, you know, with regard to their capability set. I mean, they have the capability set of being as smart as anybody else. The problem we have is you're doing them a disservice by putting them in and then having them miss opportunities to be promoted meritoriously. You know, you're not going to have women. They're going to be in the top 10%, you know, physically, you know, out of your PFT scores. It's just not going to happen. And, you know, can they shoot as well as men? Absolutely. I would imagine that, you know, I haven't seen the data, but I can imagine their capacity to shoot just as well. But, you know, taking those hard billets, you know, if you don't deploy, it's going to be pretty tough for you to, you know, be promoted. And I think that's one of the things that, you know, I don't think it gets addressed.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it's hard. We struggle with, I know you've been part of, as I've been, part of force preservation boards where you're looking at people that are at risk. And in my opinion, the Marine Corps, you look at some of those, they present these folders to you. And I used to ask all the time, why are we keeping this person in? This person is going to take years of therapy to get to be full up round. It's not, the juice isn't worth the squeeze. We need to get them back to the custody of their family and get them the help they need. They can't
withstand
the rigors of this, hey, grab your trash, get on the truck, we're going to fly here, we're going to be there for 90 days, we're going to be doing this, and I don't have time. You know, I don't have time to wipe your ass. I don't have time to do that. You need to be a rough and tumble piece of gear that we can use. And if you're not that, then we have very, very limited use for you. And if it lasts an extended period of time, we have no use for you. And that's just a general rule that applies to everybody. And I just don't think you can't get by that with this. So.
Well, then everybody else has a lift. You know, that's the other part, that, you know, that TO that you get with that transgender, you know, individual into your unit, you know, you're trying to build a cohesive unit that in 7 months we're deploying, and we're going to deploy for 7 months, we're going to come back, and then chances are we're going to get re-tagged again, or I have to go to, you know, 29 Palms to support a unit for a month or whatever it might be, and those are things that's not, I mean, life's not fair, as we all know, but it's hard enough to deploy as it is. You know, yet alone now be shorthanded. Oh, by the way, this one, you know, is, you know, got some issues and they're not deploying. You know, and you're going, oh, great. Well, is he a section chief? Right. You know, that's going to be a problem.
Well, Mike, I mentioned that pregnancy is problematic, right? You have this unit, you built it, and all of a sudden, one of your Marines walks in and says, "I'm pregnant,"
mm-hmm.
and you're like, "Oh shit." Okay, so now she's out. Everybody else steps up. Do you get somebody in, or you just get back from a deployment and you're home for a month, and then somebody else is supposed to deploy, and they come to you and say, "Hey, we need one of your sergeants to go with them."
Mm-hmm.
Wait a minute, we've only been home for 45 days. So and so is pregnant; they can't go. And that happens in the Marine Corps. It's hard to, you know, you call somebody in and say, "Hey, you've got to go, sir. I just got home. I with my wife and my kids." We don't have anybody else. I've tried, but I can't. You've got to go. Mm-hmm. And you do it all the time. So it just, you can see the dilemma that you deal with. Let's switch gears and talk about the Soldiers Project. First of all, you are the National Executive Director. Congratulations on that.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And let me read the mission statement, the upshot. We provide free, confidential, and unlimited mental health services to any active duty service member or veteran who has served since September 11, 2001. We provide services to family and loved ones too, wives, husbands, partners, parents, and children. We don't turn anyone away based on discharge status, branch of service, or whether they saw combat. If you served, you get seen. Pretty impressive, pretty cool mission statement. First of all, can we a few basics? How long has the organization been around? How many cities or states is the organization in right now?
Well, we've been around. Dr. Judith Broder, who's a LA-based psychologist, founded us in 2004. And that's where the organization was born, right out of L.A. here. So a lot of psychotherapy experts that basically developed a pro bono model. So basically you have a series of, you know, people you're recruiting. They have a couple hours, you know, in the course of a week that they could donate their time. So it was all free of charge in that sense. We didn't even have permanent staff until sometime later. But we have these chapters, which are located in 7 states, and they have a chapter director, and then, of course, what they do is they essentially just create, you know, a satellite, and then they have to do the recruiting for their own, you know, clinicians and, you know, outreach events and those types of things. Those are paid positions for those chapter directors. And so we have another one in Sacramento. We consider ourselves here the, you know, the Soldiers Project, we call it TSP. TSP, you know, Southern California, and then TSP, Sacramento. And the Sacramento, chapter's done very, very well, along with some of the other ones as well. But, so that's what we've been historically.
What is how are you funded? How do people find you? And what's the plan to spread? Are you going to, at some point, are you going to be in most of the major veteran population centers around the country? Give me the vision.
Well, this is really exciting because we are at kind of a capacity load at this point. We've really gone out. We're a 503C, which, again, nonprofit organization. So we fundraise everything that we get. So we work hard with grants, those things. We don't take, we haven't charged or anything like that. And we're trying to work the piece with some governmental funding and partnerships. Right now is a very, very interesting time in our country with regard to VA. We work specifically with DMH, Los Angeles Department of Mental Health. And so we're building capacities, what we're doing now. What's happened over time is this war is long, as you know, and it's not going away anytime soon. The problem with that and the challenges come with that with donating time because it's, you know, Afghanistan and Iraq are not front page news anymore. You know, they're page 3, 4 type things. And so you have to build sustainability over time. And that's one thing they brought me in. Because I'm not a clinician, as you and I have visited before, but I'm an operations guy, and you know, with an MBA and pretty well networked in LA, and that was one of the things with when I was working with Cohen before they dropped the program in LA. We were able to they recruited me, and I was fortunate enough to land here. So we're trying to do a lot of neat things, vision, you know, it's from a visionary perspective. We're really examining our mission statement. Because I think there's room for growth in that. I think we kind of, the 9/11, you know, the discussion with 9/11 vets, you know, kind of leaves me a little uneasy because we have, in LA alone, we have 320,000 veterans in this county alone. It's the largest amount of veterans in the entire United States, per, you know, as far as per capita.
Right.
And it's a huge need. And if you imagine the difficulties in L.A. County is not, you know, a 10-mile range ring around downtown L.A. is could take you an hour and a half, 2 hours to get somewhere sometimes on certain hours and certain days. So that range ring, 10 miles versus, you know, say, you know, Dallas, for example, is significantly different, especially when you're looking from Long Beach all the way up to Lancaster and Palmdale, which is the north end from the south or south end to north end. So I see this as a significant problem. I mean, I love my 9/11 vets because we've been in that fight, but we have a moral obligation to support other people as well. And so we have in LA County, you know, 1,000 service members leaving every month, going from utilities to a polo shirt. And they're leaving to come here. 12,000 annually, and if we figure that 40% of them, you know, we estimate have mental and behavioral issues that are unaddressed. So that is a huge amount of the population that I, you know, you can't tell by face value if they're injured. And again, we talk about hidden, you know, wounds of war. That's one of our slogans that we use, healing that. It's a very difficult diagnosis. It takes a lot of time. And it's not something that you break your arm and you're instantly hurt on that day. You go to the doctor the same day or right thereafter, and mental health doesn't work like that because you have to have a high watermark with stress, and oftentimes it goes undiagnosed. So here they enter the community and stuff. So this also ties in with OTH, the new OTH law that the VA secretary has put into operations essentially 5 July, and I don't know how much you know about that, but that's a significant problem that we have to frame. There's over 500,000 OTHs that are other than honorables, for those that don't know. And, of course, that, you know, BCDs, bad conduct discharges, do not rate services with VA. So veterans, and I don't know if people know this,
So everybody knows, there tends to be a lot of issues relative to that segment of veterans. Which is what got them their OTH to begin with. You know, some of them are post-traumatic stress guys, and then that stuff manifested itself through, you know, crimes that were punished in under the UCMJ and then discharged because of it. And the underlying cause is their post-traumatic stress or some other mental health issue. Sure. So that's not a small deal.
Well, it's a significant muscle movement. And as you know, with anything else, you know, there's 500,000 OTHs across the country, they estimate. And that goes all the way back to, you know, Korea or whenever they were discharged, if they're still alive. So if you take 10% of the math on that, that's about what LA has for population. That's 50,000 vets that are in our county that have potential needs. Now, the way that the law, I just went to a briefing last night or yesterday afternoon that spoke specifically about how we're going to treat them, because what they need to do is they need to go directly to a VA triage center or hospital. Again, it's not any, it has to be a suicidal ideation or anything to do with that, and they will be seen immediately for 90 days. Now, I don't know how long it will take them to get into the, you know, treatment through VA to get that, but I would imagine they can do inpatient, they can do all sorts of whatever for 90 days. It can be extended all the way out to another 90 days. So essentially you get 190 or 180 days of service to help these veterans. Now, there's no physical services. It's only mental and behavioral health. So that's another whole stream that I see us having responsibilities to cover down on. And I say that as a society, a community, because not just Soldiers Project, but other agencies as well. So that's this war, Mac, and you know this, you know, if you look at our BOG numbers, for example, and they go from 2000.
Explain BOG.
Boots on the ground.
Okay.
So if you look at our BOG numbers, and I was tracking this when I was at CENTCOM, you know, and I would imagine about a third of our force structure, maybe a little bit less than that, but about a third is probably CIA, DEA, police agencies that are advisory groups, contractors, journalists. Anybody that's over there in that theater right now is serving. The question that I have is that, do they not rate services too? And so those are questions that I'm bringing up to our organization, our board membership. Say, hey, we need to really examine this mission statement, because if these people are also coming back into our communities, why wouldn't they receive care too?
Right.
So we're trying to find different streams, because that also opens up funding streams for us that we wouldn't be able to have. So that's one of the other reasons that I'm looking at doing this. So what we're trying to do is we're going to keep our core competencies, you know, with the pro bono model. But if I can't make my 7-day window between when, you know, McNamara calls me, I've got issues, I'm going to see you within seven days, could be earlier. The challenge is, if we can't do that because I don't have enough providers, then essentially then I go back to 8, 9, 10, 14 days, and then I can't get a hold of somebody to be able to give you care, then I've missed the mark. So what we're trying to do now is develop a pilot program. And this pilot program we want to roll out here fairly soon. You know, when I looked at the problem, and again, thank God for Marine Corps planning process and, you know, rapid response planning process time. I'm such, you know, we're such nerds on so many levels.
Don't include me in that. I'm not a nerd.
Oh, Lord. It actually is.
I'm a current ops guy. I stayed away from you dorks.
You know, it's scarred me for life. In fact, I probably, you know, have parts of... all the way down my arm and tattoos. But, you know, it's funny because it's a great tool. I mean, I use it for this particularly because I'm treating this like counterinsurgency. You have to look at mental and behavioral health like counterinsurgency. It's the same model. It's just you're not fighting the Taliban. You're fighting behavioral issues. You're fighting anxiety, sleeplessness,
that has legal issues. That has dork written all over it. Do you know that?
Well, let me tell you how I'm solving my problem, though. See, if you don't, and this is how VA, you know, and VA is a great organization, so, mm-hmm. You know, we partner with them. So,
I will tell you this, the guy who's running it now,
uh-huh.
I don't know if he can sustain what he's doing, but I don't think any veteran...
That's a secondary conflict. Yeah,
right?
That's secondary.
I don't know any veteran who hasn't seen the things that he's shown up and done that hasn't looked and said, you know, now can he sustain the change, which is for such a big organization and bureaucracy, is a big question. But to me, he's done a lot of things that people have looked at and said, guy seems like he has a clue. So we'll see.
Like any other bureaucracy, and we've worked for it for two decades, whenever you have a great idea, and it's coming from a general officer or someone in executive level staff, they push it down, we're going to do this. You know, I'm sure they've war gamed it a little bit, but chances are the people that are executing the plan are going to start doing their plan now. In fact, that's kind of what we've had with our dialogue. You know, you ask the people that are doing the work, you know, with VA, and they're like, well, we're not really sure how that's going to work out.
Right.
And we're like, well, you better figure it out, because now it's got to go back up and, you know, the refinement process back and forth. So I think these next several months are going to be really crucial, because I think that the long pole in the tent is the ability to have enough providers to support the services, because, you know, VA has struggled with that, with being, you know, able to get people in very quickly when you're out of care. Not for if you're in care, usually, you know, your line is usually good for, you know, because you'll just set up the next appointment and that stuff. But when you're out of it, you know, 56% of our brothers and sisters don't access VA. They wait, data shows that they wait 2 to 3 years before they go into VA. Right. And that's where the problem is, because now they try to go back into the system. They don't have their paperwork in line. They've got to get all their stuff, and now they can't get seen for 2 months. And that's where there's some systematic problems that are challenging for them. But I would imagine these next few months are going to be really crucial for their staff, you know, the VA staff, to be able to refine that plan and then provide outsource. Because I look at it this way, who's going to take care of them after 180 days if they get, you know, an extension of 90 days? You know, that means that people like organizations like Soldiers Project are going to have to, you know, come in and do the lifting, or DMH, you know, Department of Mental Health in LA. So those are things that we're going to really have to examine, you know, for those needs, because is it long term? I mean, remember, these people haven't seen, you know, if they're OTHs and they've never seen, let me put some data out there. The veterans in our space are not just 9/11, but any veteran particularly that has an honorable or a general discharge has three times the suicide rate as their civilian counterpart.
Wow.
OTHs have even a higher level than that. So those people are chronically homeless. You know, oftentimes they're acute. You know, we're talking about decades and decades of non-service support with chemical abuse, self-medication, all that, and so now you're going to tell me that's going to be cured in 90 days? You know, that's not a possibility. So that's where we need to be able to be tied into that funding stream to help self-support ourselves, because, you know, we talk about free care. This isn't free. You know, we're looking at other opportunities potentially, like low-cost model, where you pay what you can pay. You know, one of the things that I looked at was we have about a 52%, this is nationally across the board, with mental and behavioral health, where people have appointments and they drop them. They don't show up. And so what does that do for a clinician who's volunteering their time for that hour? They just lost $200 potentially, because that's what, about $200 an hour is what they usually charge, sometimes more. So you see that problem. When you got that broken elbow, you're going to that doctor because it hurts like hell. You know, when you have mental and behavioral health, it doesn't always work like that. I don't feel like going, I'm tired. You know, that kind of thing. So what I was thinking about doing, and I looked at some data on this, is why don't we do the, you know, have a pay it forward program where now, you know, Matt comes in, you know, you're an affluent guy, and I know you're worth, you know, several million dollars, so I can say this in this example.
Nice.
So you say, hey, you know, you went the first time, here's the deal. What's it worth to you? You know, we're going to have another session next week. What's it worth to you? You say, you know what, I'll pay $50. And so you pay that clinician $50, you know, we work something out with pay, but, you know, we pay that $50. And then you got, you know, Mike McDowell comes in, I'm homeless. I've been homeless since, you know, after my time in Vietnam. I can only, you know, how much can you afford? Well, I got a quarter, right? You got to pay it. Now, it's not the money that's the commitment. It's the skin in the game, because they're more likely to come back that second time or fourth time or tenth time, whatever they're coming, when they've invested in their therapy, when they've invested in their ability to get better. And sometimes I was thinking about that. Maybe that's the way, direction we need to go.
Well, I will tell you this. Certainly when some form of buy-in, and I say this about a whole variety of veterans programs, the programs, if you give it away free, it will be treated like something free. And,
yes,
and
that's exactly right.
Part of the SAD screening is even if it was $15, the fact that they bought in and they have something into it sends the attendance rate through the roof relative to if you don't. It's almost it's a difference between night and day. And again, that's the next question is, okay, how do you get them to buy in? How do you get them to pay? What do you have to do? And then that's another issue that we could talk about. My guest, Mike McDowell from the Soldiers Project, the executive director. Mike, we've got to take a quick break. I've got a couple emails for you. I'll come back and tackle those as we continue to get smart about a huge need in the nation. And that's not only that, the guys with OTHs and then family members, all of that is a huge need that largely goes unmet around the country on a daily basis. Mike and the Soldiers Project stepping into that void, and interesting, groundbreaking stuff, to be honest with you. More of him next on a Thursday edition of All Marine Radio right here on the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
Are you looking for the perfect gift for somebody who's in the military? For a first responder? For a hunter? For an outdoorsman? Or somebody that just likes cool military stuff? I've got the perfect gift for you. The Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol, enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out. BattleMug.com.
My name is Juan Perez, Jr. I joined the military in 98. I commissioned as an officer. But I always had in mind the idea that I would go into the special operations community, particularly the special forces. I was accepted to go into selection, and I attended on September 8th of 2001. As I was making my departure of the military, there was that uncertainty. What do I do next? How do I repurpose my skills in a way that's not only meaningful to me, but also that provides for my family and provides an increase in our a way of living, a quality of life. The Global South Foundation has resources when it comes to anything from building resumes to how to relate to a CEO in conversation, how to basically, again, repurpose that which I had learned in a career in special operations, dealing at the strategic and operational level. How do I take that and then turn it towards entrepreneurial spirit into business development? And how do I translate that so somebody can see that value? And in doing so, I landed a magnificent and very rewarding career. I'm the VP of operations for an IT company called BuildSourced. What I say to veterans getting out, be bold. Be bold when you go to network. Go out to the Global South website, look at what events they have lined up, attend those events, and participate. A lot of the events they hold, they're of key importance in this network. Go out there and engage, just like you would engage in a combat zone, when you're networking there. With folks that don't share necessarily your language, your culture, or your background, and yet we still make it happen. How can we not make it happen here?
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Well, everybody else is getting out of bed. I'm usually getting 8:50 on the West Coast. Mike McDowell and I are both on the West Coast, so that's easy. And Mike is the executive director of the Soldiers Project. So he's spent the better part of an hour with us and talking about post-combat related mental health services and how we do that in a better manner, how we use outreach to get more people involved in it and hopefully affect more people, improve the quality of their lives. I got forwarded this here in the last hour, and we were talking about this earlier. From the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff to service chiefs, commanders, and senior enlisted leaders. I know there are questions about yesterday's announcement on the transgender policy by the president. There will be no modifications to the current policy until the president's direction has been received by the Secretary of Defense and the Secretary has issued implementation guidelines. In the meantime, we will continue to treat all of our personnel with respect. As importantly, given the current fight and the challenge we face, we will all remain focused on accomplishing our assigned missions. I'd ask that you ensure widest dissemination. Very respectfully, Joe. That would be General Joseph Dunford to the rest of us. But
Grizzly Six.
Exactly. So, no, I mean, very much Joe Dunford. Stay in your lane do your job. This thing... we'll see how it lays itself down. I've got a couple emails. Mac, first of all, just want to applaud Mike on what he's doing. These kind of services are needed. One of the problems he mentioned is simply getting to them. How do they deliver this to remote locations, even in Los Angeles? You know, if I'm in the San Fernando Valley, to go into downtown Los Angeles, that's essentially an all-day event for me. If I live in Orange County, and then in parentheses, down where you live, Mac, I think it is similar. You have to devote the better part of 2 hours to get someplace, and then the time there, and then the better part of 2 hours to get back if you live more than 30 miles away. It's simply the way it is. But I would also say the same thing relative to services to other parts of the state. How do you deliver these in a remote fashion? So, Mike, how do you do that?
Well, right now, we only have physical providers that are in place. We have other tools like telehealth, telemental health, that we can certainly use. That uses a platform. It could be a video teleconference. It could be, you know, ideally, that's probably the best. I mean, right. You can do telephone, that type of thing. But that's right now the only thing we can do. But what we're trying to do is build a pilot program. And I think by need, it'll, you know, you have to go and look predominantly where veterans are, at least in L.A., for example. And just use that for example. Where they live, you know, again, talking about the insurgency model, where do they live? Where do they work? You know, if you're an 8-to-5 clinic, you know, if you're a working individual, how are you going to get there? That's by time, issue. And then also the geographic space. is very difficult to get there. So what we're trying to do is build this thing in San Gabriel Valley, this model, and we want to really start, you know, slow, because we want to start eventually hiring our own clinicians. So if we were to do that, you know, tying that in with the outreach piece, that's where we want to go. We want to be able to park ourselves in community colleges, because, you know, 84% of our Marines and sailors and veterans in general that use education benefits go to JCs. So why would you not park your tail end there with, you know, with peer support? Peer support, as you know, is crucial. You know, we're a skeptical bunch, veterans, because we've been misread on, or, you know, misled down a lot of different paths. So we're real skeptical. We want to show me, don't tell me. And that's why we want to implement peer support, because that also drops that rate down of 52% of no-shows. That's an element you can mitigate that statistic with constant help with peers. So that's a model. Again, we want to be in areas where we're very similar in close, you know, proximity to train stations and bus stops, and, you know, we don't want to be isolated. The Lancaster piece is a significant, you know, it is significantly on my mind. We have huge needs in Lancaster Palmdale, huge needs in San Gabriel Valley, in East LA area, you know, El Monte all the way to West Covina and that area down to Whittier. There's a huge need in South Central. There's a huge need in Central Long Beach. You know, do we need people in, you know, Pasadena? Do we need, you know, the veterans don't live there. I mean, there are veterans there, but by they can't afford to live there. So, you know, we need to go out to the peripherals and live within that community. I'd love to be able to partner with urgent care as general. That's my big picture thing, because I want to be in every location of every community that we serve. Do we want to have psychologists and psychiatrists and you know, clinical social workers in colleges? Not necessarily, because I think confidentiality is important. I don't really want to be seen going into a, you know, college VRC, a veteran resource center. I like to go in there just to, you know, BS with my peer support person that's assigned there. You know, we just talk about whatever. Because the colleges are really an important piece. Because when you come out of the Marine Corps and you have, Mac, you had Marines that were in sailors that came up to you and you're like, hey, Devil Dog, hey, you know, Sailor, what do you got going here? Well, you're leader EAS in here in a week. What's the plan? You know, and hopefully you've done this before, more than 2 weeks, you know, out. But, you know, and it's like, sure, I've got it all. You know, I'm taking my 9/11 GI Bill, I'm making $2,500 a month. You know, I'm going to Citrus College. I'm living with my girlfriend. You know, we've been dating for, you know, about 6 months. Everything's great. I'm going to get married to her, whatever it might be. And then you're going, all right.
No, at that point, I would say, you got a picture. Right? Come on. I'm an infantryman. You got a picture? Let me see her. Right? And then
that's where they go.
And then the next question, are you going towards something, or are you just getting out of the Marine Corps? And you try to get a feel for where they're headed, and you sit down, and again, hopefully you've done this, you know, before he's got his checkout sheet, and a month or you know, months, years in advance, trying to help them, you know, for this, to prepare for this transition, because the combination of mental health issues, and when I say it, you know, most of it's post-traumatic stress. And then being cast adrift from the structure that you've known can be lethal. And so you really do, if you love them, and we do, sit down with them and say, hey, what do you got going? I'd love to help. I'd love to take a look at your resume. I'd love to point you to a professional resume writer who understands keyword searches, and where you're trying to go, what you're trying to do. I've done a few budgets in my life. And so I'd love to help if you want to help. And, you know, hopefully you've done that thing. And then you can say, yeah, can I see a picture too? And, because we are Marines. Hey, I'm not going to apologize for it. It's the way we are, man.
you know, it's funny, because in my mind, as we examine this problem, you know, the community colleges, we say, are so important because, all right, so that's what I'm going to do. So he leaves or she leaves, and they're going to take their money, and they're on the honeymoon period, because right now they're out of the Marine Corps, which is for the last 3.5 years. That's what they've been thinking about. I hate this place. It's, you know, it's restrictive. It's, you know, and everything. And they come back, they're going, we should have stayed in. You know, you've heard that a few times. But they go to school. They're at Citrus College, for example, and Well, they have, you know, they're part of the 40% that have unresolved mental, you know, needs. And they go to school. And what happens about midterms? They start getting stressed. And then the water level starts getting up close to their nose. And they are now drinking to alleviate stress. Maybe they smoke dope now. Because that's the thing to do, I guess, right?
And maybe they're fighting with their girlfriend because and study habits aren't what they are. What they need to be, because we're partying a little bit too much. She sees
it. And by the way, she called the cops.
Right.
And
she
now
sees it.
The cops are down.
Yeah. She sees it. She tells you she doesn't like it. And you tell her, you know, what do you mean? Come on. I rate this. You know, no, you're being a loser. You know, and so life's not going the way it was conceived to. And you're.
Yep. And,
yeah.
And that's the other thing with legal issues, because we find that the biggest, you know, thing for suicide is unresolved legal issues. So we're tying in with all these other nonprofit groups so that we can get a 1-2-3 punch for this, you know, for this example of this veteran that I'm using. So then they get a domestic charge because they push their girlfriend, you know, and she hit her head or whatever, you know, might be. Now he's arrested and now he bunks out of school. He loses his $2,500 and now he's, you know, his girlfriend kicked him out, so now he's living in his car. Maybe he doesn't even have a car, so now he goes into the street, takes his sleeping bag with him, and so that's where we're at. And you're talking about a huge amount of people in LA County alone that fall into that space. So, you know, that's one of the things, and I gotta tell you, I need some help from you. I got an idea I'm trying to push, and I want somebody that's really serious about helping, not reactionary, but in a preventative way. I want authorization as just a pilot that I can take peer support that are trained and certified, that are other veterans, in kind. I want to go to Camp Pendleton, and I want you as the CG to give authorization for Soldiers Project to get anybody that's going into LA County, because I just want to do LA County for now, and you give me permission to speak with them 180 days prior to their EAS. You got to give me 6 months to the left because I can't do this at TAP and TAP. It doesn't work. TAP is adequate at best, in my opinion. And you give me 180 days with those people, and I have the ability to get their contact information with regard to email and then also teleconference so we can teleconference back and forth to somebody because they're coming to L.A. in county, and I'm going to set them up with a peer support that walks them through the process, that walks them through, hey, where are you going to live? Marine. Well, I'm going to live in West LA because that's where Hollywood. Well, how much money do you have? You're not going to be able to live there. You have a car? No, I don't have a car. Well, you're going to have to get an apartment next to a, you know, somewhere probably on the peripheral, maybe East County. Have you looked at Lancaster, you know, Santa Clarita or something? You know, those are things. And let me get you tied in, Marine, with my network. We have a collaborative that we meet with here, you know, at this location, you know, once every week or once every 2 weeks. And then I work at this VA, you know, I you have your own VA, I go up to Sepulveda, but, you know, help them navigate the terrain. And then, you know, every month you maybe have a teleconference with this individual and you just walk the dog on this thing. And then what I want to do is I want to get study and I want to get data on this to see if we can prevent homelessness with this significantly. And I believe we can. Because I need them 180 days, though, because I need, if they're going to go to college, they got to get time for their application. You know, it takes time to do this. And if you give me one of your listeners out there, you know, that's tied in with the CG over Pendleton, because we're Marines, I'd like to just do this, this test. I will make everything public, and I will send this directly to General Mattis and say, listen, this is the answer to preventative homelessness, mental and behavioral health needs, and legal issues, along with education benefits, this will change the game. So that's what I'm trying to get done. So if we can do this, I believe without a doubt, nobody has the connections that I have as far as in the bases, as you know, in Marines and Sailors that we do. And if we're such a small unit in our agency with regard to the Marine Corps, we could really change some things.
How do people find you?
They can, find us on the web, www.thesoldiersproject.org. And again, thesoldiersproject.org. And then
are you on Facebook?
We can be reached at our headquarters at 818 761-7438, 818-761-7438. And we're over here in North Hollywood, California by headquarters. But we're all over Southern California, San Diego. We've got in Sacramento. The thing about telehealth is we can get to you via telehealth without any issue, just as long as you're in the state of California.
That's nice. North Hollywood, NoHo. Yeah.
Paradise over here. There right across the street from North Hollywood Toyota.
So. There you have it. All right. All right. Mike, first of all, do you know Eric Smith, the CG of the division?
I do not. I've never worked with that gentleman.
Okay. All right. All right. Let me do some digging. I owe you a couple contacts, so I'll do my best.
I appreciate it.
Not a problem. All right. The Soldiers Project, the Mike McDowell, doing good stuff. So, Mike, first of all, thanks for doing this morning. We'll do it again in the not-too-distant future, and you can keep updating us on where you're going and what you're doing. And honestly, all the best of luck to you. Groundbreaking stuff, and certainly the outreach piece of it is huge. So good luck.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate it. Semper Fi, and we'll talk soon.
All right, bud. There you have it. That is Michael McDowell, United States Marine Corps, retired, doing good stuff, and love to tell those stories. So hold on. Mike, another Michael is going to join us. Michael Musselman will join us. So don't touch that dial. More of this program coming up next on a Thursday edition of All Marine Radio right here on the All Warrior Radio Network.